Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
We were playing a festival last summer in Belgium, and we turned up at the hotel and reception. Oh, got a room for Mr. Hussey. And they're looking down the list. Oh, we got a room for Mr. Pussy. that must be me then.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map.
I've got a very special announcement. I'd like to welcome Wayne Hussey. Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Hello.
Hi, Wayne.
Thank you for having me.
Do you know what? I've never played a musical instrument on this program before. I'm not saying that's musical. It's an instrument.
It took you a while to get there, didn't it?
It took a bit of puff.
Back to front and upside down.
Anybody interested, it's a Hohner bass chromatic bass harmonica. It's unbelievable. We used to always try and get it onto a recording. It's great. Just sample it, wouldn't you? Oh, it's beautiful.
When you are.
Go on, sing us that song.
Oh, no.
I'll tell you that song in three.
our British viewers will know what that is.
Yeah. Well, Liverpool supporters around the world.
Well, Wayne, you just got back home because I saw you recently.
Yeah, about 4 weeks ago in Berlin. Yeah,
it was lovely.
Yeah, it was lovely. We had lovely coffee. Got home about week or so ago.
How long were you out? How long was that tour?
It was 6-7 weeks, but I was away for 8 weeks. So I'm back home, and I'm home for another week before I fly back to England next week.
To England. Wow. And then several dates around the old Blighty.
Yeah, we've got a few shows with the Cult, actually. Our old mates, the Cult.
Ian and Billy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, lovely. I've missed Billy. The Banshees and the Cult used to play Subutio together.
Really? Did you win?
No, they always cheated.
Yeah, he's very competitive, Billy.
Oh, just a little. Just a little.
Yeah, well, he's mank.
We could never get the Sabutio pitch to lie straight, you know. It's like in a hotel room somewhere, you know, after the gig. We had a hotel room. I suppose that was something to be grateful for.
Yeah. Let me guess, was Sabutio Severin's idea or was he a main proponent of that?
Well, strangely, when I was a little boy in Morley Street in St. Helens, me and a couple of the other lads, we all had Sabutio pitches. I've still got mine. Mine's still at my sister's. I know that because she brought it down from the attic last time I was there. I don't know what you were like, but when, you know, if I had like my little 45, which I also still have, you know, vinyl singles. I also had a book, and in the book I would write down the title and who was it and who wrote it and how long it was and time them to make sure that the timing on the label was correct.
And the B-sides?
And the B-side and the label, a little, if it was, you know, a design. So I, you know, this was anal. But it was just that. It was that kind of, I don't know what you call it. Is it kind of autism or something? I don't know.
No, I mean, I did a similar thing. What I used to make, listen to the top 40 on a Sunday and write it down, you know, and then I would predict what would be the top 40 the next week in my little book. And then I would, you know, give myself marks out of 10 for effort.
How close you got.
Yeah. I mean, so we all had our little...
I mean, I used to work at the news agents at the top of the street, and you know, I used to deliver newspapers, you know, and then I graduated to marking up the papers in the shop, which was better because you didn't get rained on or attacked by people's dogs. And you know, I would have a look at the Melody Maker and the Enemy as it came in as I was marking up, pretending to mark up, and I'd figure out what would have to go on my next list of my next must-have album, because, you know, I made £5 a week. So that was enough to buy one album.
That's a lot of money.
It was.
That's £5 a week? What was this? Were you working for Waterstones then or something?
No, this was working in the actual shop. The paper round, you only got like, you know, 2 and 6 pence or something. But you know.
Yeah, I had a paper round.
25 bob, I think it was.
It was something like that. And a milk round on a Saturday morning.
Coming back to the Sabutio quickly. So, David Jones. Hi, David, if you're listening. I'm sure you must be somewhere. David was another fellow wannabe musician. So he had his haircut like Brian Connolly from Sweet. And he looked after the English, what now be called the English Premier League. So he had like British Sabutio football teams. And the other chap must have had, like, I think I was demoted to having Scottish and Welsh, which had all the interesting colours. I remember having Partick Thistle, Glasgow Rangers,
the Hibernians,
Celtic, and, you know, all hoops and green and white. So they all looked like Roy the Rovers. So my teams were cool. They looked like real football colours. Whereas his had like more of the kind of new English strips at the time. And then I had my dad, God bless him, brought up this Sabutio pitch size piece of hardwood, chipboard.
Right.
It's huge, heavy stuff. And then we tacked it to the board and it stayed fully stretched at, you know, against the wall, and then lifted.
Well, that's what you were missing in the hotel rooms.
That's exactly what I couldn't play. The conditions were bad. It was soft underfoot.
A rough pitch.
Yeah, soft underfoot. I mean, you need a firm pitch, really.
Is that a John Bonham track?
Firm pitch? Probably.
No. Soft underfoot. Oh, dear, dear. Digging the barrel, though. yes, I think we did try playing Sabutio later on, you know, but they'd kind of gone on to like real football. Didn't the Banshees play The Cure at football one time?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. We did one tour. Actually, we were in Brazil, I remember, where we took on the idea of like we should play The Crew every day at football. And we just ended up paying a lot of money to the venues because we'd be indoors and be kicking the ball around and there'd be like 800, you know, marks of the ball on the wall. and we'd have to pay for it to get painted.
Glasses broken and bottles behind the bar smashed.
yeah, exactly. The usual nonsense. So we stopped after a while and only did it when we were outside.
We did a couple of those charity things back in the 80s. One at Loftus Road, Queen's Park Rangers Ground.
Yeah.
And one at Fulham, Craven Cottage. And we lost to the House Martins won the top competition. They thrashed us, actually. But we did draw with Frankie Goes to Hollywood and beat Coronation Street.
Well, that's something to be proud of, really, I think. Yeah. Because Frankie had a couple of decent players in, I would think, as well. Like, there's a couple of them.
Yeah, Holly didn't play. It was the lads.
No, I couldn't imagine Holly playing. It was the lads. Yeah. What was that guitarist called?
Nasher.
Yes, I knew him pretty well, and he strikes me as a bit of a, you know, Nobby Styles, bit of a, like, you know, hack you down at the shins, you know.
Yeah, he's a good lad. Is Nasher, but he's a Liverpool. He's a fellow Liverpool supporter, avid.
Okay.
So, you know, yeah, he knows his football.
I saw Liverpool play out here a couple of years ago. They played Chelsea. And I took a friend who'd never been to a match, and they, before the game, they were practicing out on the pitch, and I think it was Fabregas from Chelsea aimed a ball at the goal, which came over the top of the crowd and hit my friend, who was talking to my wife, square in the face, knocked her glasses flying, gave her a concussion, I think, and the whole crowd went, ooh, because they saw it, you know. That was her first match ever, and she got knocked out by a ball from Fabregas.
And she's not been back since.
Not really, no. You and Wayne have got this shared history, and I only come along halfway through that.
We do. Wayne and I, we were in a band together, weren't we, Wayne? You've told me this.
Yeah, for 2 days.
Yeah,
you don't even remember it, do you? But it was a big deal for me.
I was in bands I wasn't even in, you know.
Well, I know we would go to Eric's and we'd form a band in the evening, and then the next day we'd split up without even actually playing together.
Without playing, we'd talk about the gig, talk about the rehearsal,
what we were going to do. Yeah, it was fun days.
And then you went on to, you were with Pete Burns.
I was for a little while, yeah, for 2 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For 2 years, mm-hmm. I liked Pete.
Yeah, he was definitely a character, wasn't he? He took no prisoners, should we say that?
He took no prisoners. Because you knew Pete was around, you heard his voice first.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was like, usually giving somebody a thrashing.
Yeah, he would take no shit from anybody.
And he was built like a brick shit house.
He was a big bloke, yeah, he was.
Nobody figured this.
I only saw him the once, I think we did Top of the Pops with Dead or Alive, but he's like bigger than Boy George. You know, George is pretty, you know, handy, but Pete, you know, yeah, he was big lad.
Walked through town with him, and all the scallies would start, you know, taking the piss out of him, and he would go after him with no fear, absolutely batter them.
Did you ever get jumped on in Liverpool?
I did one time, yeah. When I was in Dead or Alive, we started going out to gay clubs because we started liking the music more than the rock music. And then one night we were coming out of the club, and I just saw Pete being dragged up the road by his dreadlocks by a couple of lads. So I went running in, and there was a group of them, you know, and then all of the Dead or Alive lads came out, and there was a bit of a scrap in the street, you know, and then broke my glasses, not my nose or anything.
As I was saying to you, Wayne, and Lol knows, I'm still writing that book.
Good boy.
And I know. You're way ahead of me, you guys. But it's funny how you get pulled right back into the moments that you're either, you think you're going to write about one thing, and then you suddenly pull it somewhere else.
Absolutely. It's like making music.
Exactly that.
Yeah, exactly. You surrender to it and you go where it takes you.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lovely feeling.
It's a new rock and roll writing books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, we're joking about it, but you're actually absolutely right, because I felt the same feeling. It's just a lot slower, you know.
Yeah, but there are moments where you catch that moment, and you really do have to surrender to it.
Right.
And it comes like a gush. You know, it comes gushing, and it's brilliant when it happens.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
But you sometimes have to work really hard to get to that point,
though. Right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct.
If writing a book is not something, you can't do, I've got a spare 10 minutes, I'll do a bit of writing. It doesn't work like that for me. I don't know about you.
I'm finding that.
No, definitely not. It definitely doesn't. I mean, for this last book, which I've just kind of finished and it's coming out, the first 6 months, I couldn't do anything. I was just like sitting there thinking, what the hell am I going to do? You know, it was just going around. And all of a sudden, it all came out, like you said, at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't edit myself at that point. I just think, like, keep going and get it all down, you know?
Yeah, it's the same with demoing. Just get it down. It's like you can go back and tart it up afterwards. You know?
Here we go. This is for Lol. Recognize this tune.
Wow.
Old Grey Whistle Test, right?
I'm speechless. That was very good.
I've been doing that for quite a while. Old Grey Whistle Test on the
1972.
Okay, I've been practicing for about 40.
I was going to say 1927. With Whispering Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Annie Nightingale.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I missed a lot of the 80s. I was there, but it was like the 60s. You know, if you remember it, you weren't there, right?
I met you for the first time in the 80s, lol. You won't remember, but I did.
I was thinking about this morning in having the shower. I was thinking, when did I first meet Wayne? And to me, the first time I think that I really remember meeting you was backstage at the Palace here about, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, the first time was when you came to see The Mission. I think we were playing at the Astoria. We were doing a run of 7 nights there, and you came and you ended up coming back to my hotel room, and we ended up seeing the sunrise together.
Yes, I do remember that. We came to the Astoria, saw The Mish play, and then we ended up talking until the early hours, you know.
I've shared unexpected sunrise moments with both members of the Cramps, I think, when Kid Congo was in the Cramps with Lux and Ivy. And then also with Kid and his band Fur Bible that Patricia Morrison was in.
I remember them, yeah.
Yeah. And who else? I can't. That's that there too, I can think of straight away. And there was lots I just remembered on my own going, oh, bloody hell, it's morning. They were the worst ones, I think. You were just on your own going, where did everybody go? Where's everybody come?
You know, like imaginary conversations you've had with people in the dawn. Yeah, and you could just put whoever you like in there, you know, and just say, I remember when I was talking to Harold Wilson, you know, just carry on, just make it up.
Oh, I tell you, I do know a good one after the Ministry of Sound in London. And I think Sugar Cubes have been playing because I was down Ministry of Sound with Einar, who is like trumpet and toaster, Einar. And so I think Susie and I were living in a hotel around the Queensgate somewhere because we're just out of our apartment and mid-tour or something. Anyway, I remember like me and Einar, we hadn't met before, and we were just like up all night, and that was it. We bonded that this like glorious long conversation. And cut long story short, and when I ended up with like John Grant a few years ago, and John lives in Iceland in Reykjavik, and it was like meeting Einar for the first time in probably as long as you and I hadn't met until like 3 weeks ago, Wayne. And it was just the same, like the conversation that probably we'd never really had was continuing.
Yeah, yeah.
did Ina remember his interactions with our glorious leader from the past? Does he remember that at all?
Now, which glorious leader are we?
with not Madam, but Bob. Does he remember his interactions with Bob?
No. Was there? It sounds like there was something going on.
I saw Bob and Aina rolling around in the mud backstage at a festival we played.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's that one. It's
it was the Zillow Festival in Germany.
Oh, the Zillow. I remember the Zillow Festival.
It was playful to start with, and then it got a little bit serious with the both of them rolling around the floor. It was like, hang on a minute, let's pull them apart. Yeah.
Right.
they could handle themselves, Doug, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, Robert is a bigger chap than Einar, for sure. He was feisty.
So you lived in a hotel. Have you lived in a hotel at any point in your existence, Wayne?
Yes, I have. I lived in the Columbia Hotel in Lancaster Gate in London for about 2 years on and off. I did have a place in Leeds, and then kept getting robbed whenever I went on tour. So it was like, okay, I'm not going to live there anymore.
Julian Cope wasn't in the Columbia by any chance, was he, at that time?
I used to bump into Julian there a few times. Yeah.
Have you read his one of his whichever one it is? I think it was probably Head On, where he goes into great detail about his room at the Columbia.
Yes, I do in my latest book, actually, or maybe it was a previous book. I go into green bedspreads with all the stains in the...
Oh, my goodness. It sounds like Julian built himself like a kind of a, what do you call him, like a cave in his room with a mattress because he was really too scared to come out anymore.
That's what the acid will do to you. It's a good book, though.
So are you doing touring around your book as well, Wayne?
No. I did that last time. I did about a 3-month tour around Europe with the first book.
Right.
Nearly killed me. It was like, it's hard work. I mean, you know, touring with a band, at least you get the tour bus and you get some sleep. But
it kind of is and it isn't, because it's like, you know, you only need one crew and then you usually finish by like 8:30 at night and you can go out to dinner.
Well, no, I was doing solo shows as well. So I was playing, you know, I play piano, I play guitar and I was doing a bit of reading and stuff, and then it was just one guy, and we were driving. So, you know, there was times you'd have to get up 6 o'clock in the morning, drive 8 hours to get to the next show. So it was tough. It was tough.
Yeah.
What I did one for Cured. I would go to somewhere like Denver, and then just stay in the same place for a week, and just drive out to the other places like Fort Collins or Boulder, you know, which are like about an hour and a half's drive.
That's sensible.
Yeah, much more reasonable. And then I did a bit in England and that, but I think I'm going to do a bit with this next one. I did South America, which was great.
Ooh.
I didn't come to your neck of the woods. I didn't come to your neck of the woods.
I was going to say, you didn't tell me.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of slipped my mind and I apologize, but I was in Peru.
Okay.
In Arequipa, and then I went to Chile, and then I flew over the top of the mountains to Argentina.
I love Argentina.
I did about a month in South America, and then I came back and I did some in Mexico as well, which was great.
Nice.
And what I would do is I would do a similar thing to you, but to kind of fund it, you know, because publishers don't give you anything, right? So I asked them in Peru and Chile and Argentina, okay, send me a video of your best Cure tribute bands, right? And I had a review, and I'll send them like 6 songs, right, that they need to know.
That's so brave. I can't believe you did this.
Yeah, then I did Chuck Berry, and I turn up and just walk on stage, no sound check, nothing. You know, just walk on stage, play the songs. It was good. As long as you had a good, solid bassist, it was good. It was really good, and it was fun to do, yeah.
All the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Pornography. Pornography is one of my favourite albums.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. By anybody.
I think the closest I've got to doing a solo show is with Susie, but it's The Creatures.
Right.
But I do remember, I remember it because I remember our manager at the time, Tim Collins. You probably remember Tim.
I remember Tim. He was the Colts tour manager.
Yes, of course he was. That was the connection. It wasn't Sibutio so much as Tim.
Yeah, there you go.
I always remember Tim because he taught me how to say a French lady's name correctly, Parmetier.
Oh, well, he would, right?
Yes, he did.
Anyway, coming back to that little tour that Tim was tour managing, and we had two cars. One was the Beagle car, because they smoked in that one.
Right.
And we had the non-Beagle car. That was me and Susie, I think. And then there was a guy driving the gear, which was just like a drum kit, really. And we was so traveling light, two town cars. I think I always loved taking a town car around America if I could. And we'd finish the show. And like, it was a bit like, you know, like real pop star stuff where you run off stage with everything soaking wet and jump in the car. We didn't even get in the dressing room and just leave. And we drive into the night. And if we're getting like halfway between, I don't know, like London and Cambridge, Ontario or something.
Yeah.
This is like big city tour. And get halfway and check into a motel and then get up at the crack of dawn and continue the drive in time for around about midday and then just collapse. And then you'd wake up for sound check and do the whole thing again. And we were younger then.
Yes.
But it was the first time we toured America and broke even. So we thought, what's good about this picture and what's not good about the other one?
But that's a good way of doing it, though. That's a good way of doing it. Come running off stage, do a runner, get out of there, get onto the next, halfway to the next place.
Yeah. Wayne, did you have to go through all the thing of changing your name when you checked into the hotel?
Yeah, we did for a little while. Yeah, we did.
What, yeah. What was yours then?
Well, first of all, it was Albie Singer. And then there was another one, Alexander Pope, when people started finding that out, you know.
Mm.
And then I went back to Albie Mission Zinger Zen.
Oh, nice one.
Yes.
That was great at breakfast, wasn't it? Mr.
Mission Zinger Zen?
Yes, your eggs are ready.
What was yours, Badgie? Can you remember yours?
I think Madam Sue was Emma Peel.
Right, right.
And I was Chad Valley.
Chad Valley. So we had this idea we'd call ourselves all different names, and then we had it all printed on the front of our tour jackets, which made it a bit superfluous.
You know? A bit obvious.
Yeah, a bit obvious. You know, I was Mr. Laszlo for a while there. Bloody ridiculous, really.
We were playing a festival last summer in Belgium, and we turned up at the hotel and reception. Oh, got a room for Mr. Hussey. And they're looking down the list. Oh, we got a room for Mr. Pussy. That must be me then. So they gave me this room. I went up to the room, and it was a lovely big room. It was like almost like a suite. And I was like,
presidential.
Yeah, led down for about half an hour. Then the phone went and said, sorry, we've given you the wrong room. Your room actually belongs to John Lydon. That was his pseudonym.
Mr. Pussy.
Mr. Pussy.
So I lived in a hotel for a time as well.
Yeah, what's the worst hotel you lived in then, Lon?
Well, the only hotel I ever really lived in was I moved to America in 1994, and you know, I was completely delusional, and I thought, well, where am I going to stay? I don't know where to stay. So I stayed at the Four Seasons in Beverly Hills for about 4 months, which was totally friggin' ridiculous. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. If I go back now, I'm sure the doorman would still know my name. So, you know, it was kind of stupid, really.
But, well, the Four Seasons, that would have been a pretty penny.
It was not cheap. No, it was not cheap. And it was a bit stupid, really. But there you go. I was suffering with delusions of grandeur.
Well, we've all done stupid things, though.
I think we used to always like staying on in a hotel when the tour had finished. I remember that was always good fun. I remember staying at the Ritz up on Central Park, New York. Just for the crack of it.
Yeah.
No, so we stayed at the Ritz Hotel, and we went out like, you know, Molly Malone's all-night Irish bar. Well, it was all night until you left. And then we went past those New York delis. You know, they are all open all night, and you get like the egg sandwich or the carrot cake. But they had these watermelons, and they were like literally like huge things. You couldn't hardly lift it, and you needed a pram. It was bigger than a baby, and got it back up to the hotel room and thought, oh, fancy a bit of that. So we got bludgeoned it. It was bludgeoned this watermelon to death in the and after we rolled it down the street. And it was just that we munched it and then collapsed probably, you know, and it was just the scene the next day. It did look like something bad had happened in the bathroom. I think we just left it. left the murdered melon.
Yeah, because I was thinking they don't hand out big knives, do they? They don't hand out big knives to cut watermelons in hotels.
No. We just ripped it apart with our, you know, fists. The murdered melon mystery.
Yeah, one thing I like to do after the end of a tour is actually, if I'm in a country that I've not too familiar with, is actually stay on and rent a car, have a little drive around. That's always a good thing. The stranger the place, the better.
What's the strangest place you stayed on and rented a vehicle and did you get lost?
Right.
Well, New Zealand was not strange, but it was there were some very remote places I went to there, like beaches, which were huge beaches where there was absolutely nobody there, no roads, nothing. And you get on the beach and it's kind of spooky but spiritual. You're just there on your own, and you have to park up the hill and walk down through the jungle to get there, and it was amazing. Moscow was another place that was feeling like I was in a really foreign place. Don't know if you've ever been there, but that was a strange one for me, Moscow. I liked it there though. They got all these metro stations that Stalin built, so they're all Art Deco, and all the station names are in Russian, you know, so they use the hieroglyphics, so it's impossible to know where you are. You look at the map and it's like, okay. But I did make it back to the hotel eventually. He just got one ticket and went around to all these Art Deco stations. It was actually a nice way to spend
museums underground.
Yep. And they're beautiful, some of them. Yeah, really beautiful.
I've never made it to Moscow yet, but when I do, I shall definitely go and take a look at that.
Yeah, I won't bother going at the moment.
No, well, at the moment it'd probably be a bit unfriendly. I have a tip that I always used to tell everybody for like staying in a foreign city and finding my way home, because, you know, I never knew when I was, what was going to happen, right? So back in the day when people used to smoke a lot in hotels, I would always, first thing I did when I got into my hotel room was get the matchbox with the hotel's name on, slip it in my pocket, because at 4 a.m. trying to tell a taxi driver where I'm staying in a foreign language, much better just to show him the matchbook.
And that's a good one.
That's a good one. But I know that I would have like a bag full of these matchboxes and, you know, paper wrap of things. You're like, which one was it? It's like,
which one is it?
Yeah, but you're in a different city. You know, we're like, this one was from last night.
Well, as long as I ended up at one and it had a bed, I'd be fine. You know?
That's 200 miles away, sir. Okay.
Yeah. That's all right. I just tell him the tour manager will pay you. It'll be fine.
It reminds me, I was touring with Juno React out of Brighton, and Ben had two guys, Mabi and Mandela from South Africa, percussion. They would fly up to like Europe. We were going to Moscow or St. Petersburg or something. It was the first time I'd been there as well. And they got off the plane, supposed to change planes, I think somewhere like, you know, Dusseldorf or something. And they got the name of the hotel they were supposed to be going to in Moscow and gave it to the driver. And the driver just drove off somewhere through darkest Germany. And they said, here you are. And they're like, what's this? Where's the band? What country are we in? I had no money. But then they got on the phone, like reverse charges, and say, where are you? We said, we're in Moscow. Where are you guys? We're on. I'm telling it now, thinking, no, that couldn't possibly have happened, but it did. And they made it. They made it.
countryside near Dusseldorf.
Oh, it was just that they had to then get the taxi driver to agree to have the money wired to him for driving them nowhere and then driving them back to the airport so they could get on the plane they were supposed to get on in the first place. Does this stuff like ring of Spinal Tap?
Curious Creatures is created and presented by Lol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Wilde.
Digital marketing, Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design, Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production, Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
And you can reach us on Instagram and Facebook at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter at Cura Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram or at doubleelvis on Twitter.
Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2023.